From the headquarters of Team Cowboy, coming to you all the way from Anderson, South Carolina, this is the Finance Cowboy Show, where we're going to teach you how you can create your dream life through the greatest asset in the world, real estate. I'm your host, Jaron Sustar, and I went from having zero properties in 2018 to a portfolio of over $5 million worth of real estate by 2021, and I am excited to be able to teach you all the lessons, tips, and tricks that I have learned throughout my journey while also introducing you to some of the greatest real estate minds in this entire world. So without further ado, let's get this party started. All right, welcome back to the show. I'm here with Serena Norris. What's up, Serena?
What's up, Jaron?
I am stoked to have Serena on. Serena has been working with the Finance Cowboy business and our team to try to turn our chaos into organization. And so I was like, you got to come on the podcast and tell your story and promote yourself, because there's a lot of people who could use what you teach. So I am stoked to have you on today.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
So you got into real estate, what, 2015? Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to be 9 years this April.
Wow. So give us the backstory. How'd it happen? How'd you fall into real estate?
Yeah. Well, there's a whole backstory why I ended up going into real estate. You know, I'll tell you the short story with that. I grew up here in Western Washington, outside Seattle, and then moved down to LA for college. Went to college, did that for a few years. My background, graphic design, branding, marketing. And then I decided I wanted to work for myself, but I didn't want to just do freelance graphic design. I wanted to figure out how to leverage more than just my time for money. Mm-hmm. And so kind of went out to Hawaii for a little bit, like for a year and a half, trying to figure it out and have fun. I was in my early 20s still. And then I read a few books. I had a friend that kind of put house hacking into my mind, and I read Rich Dad Poor Dad. And I remember I was just sitting in a laundromat. I lived in Waikiki in like a 155 square foot apartment. And I just was looking, yeah, it was so small, but it was two blocks from the beach. So really nice.
We can deal with that.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't even have a kitchen. It was like a fridge. And then eventually my dad like brought me a microwave. So anyways, it was crazy, but it was so fun. I was reading Rich Dad Poor Dad in the laundromat, and I just remember going, oh my gosh, real estate makes so much sense for me. Like, not only was my dad a general contractor, but also my grandpa, my other grandpa, and then another family member was an architect. And so I was just in and out of remodels by the time I could walk, and would constantly talking about like floor plans with them and how to renovate spaces. And I just had an obsession for houses at a young age. And then I kind of put two and two together. I was like, I can work for myself. Like, I'm going to flip houses, eventually acquire and hold them to be able to get passive income. Kind of like, you know, everyone's dream if they want to start with the single family avenue first. But at that point, I didn't know anyone in real estate or construction that was still in Western Washington. And I was planning on moving back home because I was a bit homesick. And so I just decided to get my broker's license online, and I was going to move home and kind of take it from there because I had no idea where to go. And 2 days later is where I met my mentor, Tarl Yarber, and was pretty much like, I'm going to work for you. Like, when can we meet next week? I'll do whatever. Like, I just want to learn. And so I just started like hourly with him, just, you know, picking up. At that point, he was boots on the ground investor for other out of state investors, but also acquiring stuff himself. And he had like 25 flips going on at a time. And it was just him managing and barely any systems. So that was crazy. Like, kind of just went head first into that. And we just worked really well together. And eventually I learned like so much about construction to the point, you know, I was managing all of the construction myself and helping him with underwriting and pretty much saying yes or no to deals. And then also I'd had my license. And so I'd also do disposition on the side.
So it's just y'all two, and y'all are all just like, both just got all this going on. Analyzing the deals, managing construction, brokering the deals.
Yeah. In the beginning, it was like, it was easier managing that because the market hadn't taken off so crazy yet. Yeah. So he could pretty much pair like a general contractor with the broker. So I didn't start off as his brokers. A lot of times brokers would give him deals, so then they'd get the list back. Yeah. And I was still kind of a novice broker. So I was also doing like residential resale clients on the side just to gain experience before going and listing all of our properties. And so he'd kind of pair them up, and then he just had to manage the construction piece with the contractor and quality control. And that worked, but as the market got busier and busier and more competitive and construction prices kept going up, contractors got work easier, we ended up having to manage like all of the construction. And we pretty much only hire GC for 30% of our scope of work. So we went from like bullet point Word document scope of works on like one or two pages to our scope of work template is on a spreadsheet of like anywhere between like 400 lines, line item stuff that ends up turning in. So super detailed, because going back to like what we'll touch on is a lot of the systems that we created around everything. So I'm really big, Jared knows, on centralized information. And so in the planning and being like really detailed about what our plan was on the project, whether through scope of works, plans, finishes, details, everything like that, it caused or it eliminated so many obstacles for us throughout the project and a lot of like micromanagement and management. And so it ended up where we were able to like have a life outside real estate, but also keep our quantity of projects at a time.
You guys were crushing it. I had Tarl on the show, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, and he was essentially telling me, you know, more in depth about the deals than what you just said, but like, you know, how you guys just went and crushed it. But he went to the deal detail and it was like, bro, y'all had so many deals going on. It was ridiculous. And a good, I mean, kudos to y'all for like doing it. I mean, that is so hard to do. And he's a great guy. He invited me to speak at an event in Denver in May. I'm super excited to get to meet a lot of folks. So I had a blast with Tarl. So shout out to Tarl. But you guys absolutely crushed it. Do you think that, because you're just amazing at teaching people how to set up systems and how to make sure everybody's playing by the same rules, they know their roles, they know their accountability. Did that come natural to you, like just forever? Or is that something that you kind of figured out while partnering with Tarl and you had so much going on and you were just kind of at the point of like, bro, we got to figure this out, and you just got good?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a combination of both. I think I've always loved efficiency. And so if I see a lot of different people having a hand just to get from A to B, then I immediately go, okay, how can we simplify this to eliminate like human error and all of the time it takes between all the hands of people. And so my mind immediately goes to efficiency, is what system can we create? I will say that it also came from like learning about construction too. And then over time seeing how repetitive it was and being like, okay, with this repetition, I can analyze that and then create tools for people to get information them quicker and be like more proactive in the information that they need up front instead of constantly being reactive. Like, I can't tell you how many times in the beginning, once I was in charge of all of the finishes on the property, right? Like, types of fixtures and paint colors and anything to do with design, that the contractors would call me 7 a.m. in the morning and they'd be like, we're painting the exterior today. What's the paint color? I don't have it. We're standing at the paint shop. And I'm like, there's probably people
out there. Blood pressure rise just hearing that. Oh my
God. You know, I'm like, I'm not even a morning person. So I'm like, what? I got to choose the exterior paint color right now. And like, that's not even my property. Like, I just work for this dude right now. Right. And so I was like, that's like a $5,000 oopsie. Right. So I realized ahead of time that, you know, it wasn't just going, hey, the week before we get the stuff. It's like at the beginning of the project, we get that stuff, because I don't know about where y'all are for weather, but when they get a sunny day, when we're flipping in the fall, winter, or spring, and they just like decide last minute, they want to paint. And I was like, get them all that information ahead of time. And they enjoy that too. But to answer that question, I really started creating the systems within our business when I found like a lot of time wasted in trying to get from information around to people. And also doing the same thing over and over and over again, it just infuriates me naturally. So I was like, what tools can I create and to be able to eliminate that time waster? Or just so, and I'll give you an example of like the first system we ever created that was like, we used it from the beginning all the way to the end. And that was just, it was so simple, but the best systems are simple. And it was, we created a sheet with all of the addresses and the lockbox codes. And we had it accessible to both Tarl and I online. We could go access that anytime. Back then, it was like an Excel sheet, like filed in Dropbox, because this was before like Google Sheet, like cloud workspaces, right? And so, but at any given time, if the lockbox code changed, then we put it on that sheet, and then we both could access it anytime. Because when I first started, I was writing the lockbox codes like in a journal, or I'd have to like scroll back through text to reference that. Like, how inefficient is that, right? And so from that sheet that had the addresses and lockbox codes, then we added the entities. So that way we knew like who to bill to quickly. We didn't have to look up that information, or I didn't have to message him. Then we wrote who was driving it each week. Then we put notes, okay, what's to look for at the property every week. So that way on Mondays I could be like, hey, Heather, look at this, X, Y, and Z, need this, to reinforce of like checking that property, getting the information to me, instead of going, oh shoot, you visited that property, I needed you to do this, right? So it's like, it became this central communication piece that eliminated so much unnecessary communication. And so from there, seeing how well that simple tool worked, we just started creating, replicating tools like that, that worked to be like the centralized information for the team to go to then decentralize all of like the management.
And you would just do that as you go. So like you come across something like, oh, this is repetitive, let's get it logged.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. Yeah. Why do you think so many people don't do that? Myself included until recently.
We like to suffer. I don't know, as humans, we just
want to suffer. We have a random task and it's like, oh, I needed that like hit of like, oh, I need to go find this lockbox code. Let me search for 20 minutes on my email. Like,
right. Oh. Exactly. I think anything like a muscle, right, is learned. And so it's training your brain to go, if there's information that you have to collect, it needs to go to a centralized place. You need to start organizing that information right away. And I think a lot of people are like, I don't know how to organize. Well, the thing is like, get the information together and then you can figure out how to organize. It's kind of like, you know, if you're going to be organizing your house and you're moving into it and you have all these boxes of all of this stuff, but you don't even know what you're like, I don't know how to organize it. Well, what you start doing is you start categorizing the stuff. You start putting the kitchen stuff in the kitchen, the bedroom stuff in the bedroom, and then you break it down into pieces, and then it becomes much clearer how you want to organize it and then what you need to organize it. Like, do you need bins then? Do you need silverware trays? Do you need that kind of stuff? And that's the same goes for all of this management of information, is categorizing it into, you know, what it applies to, what's the application, and then figuring it how the best way to communicate to people. So my biggest thing that I tell investors right away is, when you make your first scope of work ever, start there to create your template. Now you have something to build off of. That is the beginning of your template. And then when you have your second scope of work, then you go, okay, can I, from what I learned from the first project, can I structure this scope of work in a better way to be clear to communicate to whoever is going to read it? Okay. So maybe you move things around a little bit, you separate interior from exterior, or whatever makes sense. And then you just keep adding things on top of it. And what we discovered, for example, like something like that, is our scope of work template, the reasons why it's like 450 line items is because we decided we want everything we could ever possibly need on a property, or anything we've ever done on a property ever, to be on our template. So that way we just delete what we don't need, which is probably going to be about 50% of the line items, maybe more. But at least we're not trying to like think in our mind, oh, what could we need? Like, because a lot of times when you're walking that property, you don't think of like a little stuff at the end of the property. I can't tell you how many times we missed the frickin' dryer venting until the end of the flip. And then we'd have to rip out drywall and vent it. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why is dryer vent not going on my scope of work? Why? So it's not on the template. And so, yeah. So yeah. Little like that.
Carl told me a story. I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he straight up called him out on the podcast, and he was laughing about it. Him and the guy were buddies. You would know whoever it was. It was like a 2-hour drive from wherever y'all were. And he had missed one thing on the scope of work. I don't know if it had to do with the electrical panel or what, but he like made the dude drive 2 hours back. But then I think he had already had somebody else look at it, so he knew, but he just wanted the dude to learn the lesson, not to, not to skip it. Yeah. I was like, savage. I've had bosses do that to me to teach a lesson, and you don't ever do it again.
Yeah, that was Nate, our acquisitions guy. Yeah. And so he literally wanted us to like analyze the property, but he forgot the electrical, like a picture of the electrical panel.
Yes.
So Charles, like, out of like a point, had him drive all the way back to the property just to get that picture and upload it. But it could have ended up costing us thousands of dollars depending on what the project was, right? Just because you forgot that one thing. And so checklists will be your friends. And I don't care how many times that you've flipped a house or walked a property for acquisitions or whatever, we're human. We make mistakes. Checklists are your friends. As nail biting as it is to be like, pull that out and do it over and over again. Like one day you're going to thank yourself and be like, oh shit, I actually would have forgotten that. And that ended up taking money out of my pocket.
It's amazing. Cause we think we have everything down. I come from the sports world. And so it's like, we talked about this. You may play sports when you were younger and you get to an age in college. I didn't really think this, but you're almost kind of like, why do I need a coach at this point? Like, I know all the fundamentals. Like, I've been doing this a long enough time.
Right.
But they're there they almost have like this checklist, and there's just little things on any given day that you'll just leave off. You know it. Like, you've done it. But for whatever reason, you're tired, you got other things going on, you'll leave it off. And the coach in the sports world is there to say, hey, you left this out today, and basically you need to work through the ball, make sure we're following our throw, you know, whatever the case may be. Same is true when you're building out scope of works and checklists for any business. Is it's just there as a safety net. Like, just don't – it keeps you from having to go back and do things and waste time that you wouldn't have to.
And absolutely. And when you start building your team too, then you actually have something for them to reference and be trained off of. Not just to give you confidence that they're going to be checking 100% of the things, but over time you have this checklist and you keep forgetting things, add it to it. Again, you're adding information to these checklists. So now you have this like complete QC checklist or whatever acquisitions checklist, whatever you need, where then when someone comes, it's not all in your head and you're trying to figure out how to make a checklist then, which I guarantee you're only going to think of 80% of the things.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you're building your team, if you are ambitious, you want to scale, you want to grow a team, or you want to take yourself out of the business and just replace yourself with people to work on the ground, those checklists, those templates are so, so helpful to give you guys them confidence that they're going to do their job correctly, but also you confidence that you have a tool for them to reference.
Yeah, that was, big when we were working with you. It was just like, we have to be able to set this up to where people can come in and understand what needs to get done without them having to come to you every time. Like, how do we build that out through documents, through systems, checklists? I mean, there's different things that go with it, but to be able to spell out exactly in this role, for this particular function of this role, this is how we do it. Will things deviate sometimes and be exactly the same? Yeah, they're going to deviate sometimes, but if we have a strong framework and then there's an outlier, okay, well, that allows us to address that outlier and add it to the checklist for next time, you know? But the more it builds out. What I've learned after working with you is like all this stuff builds out more over time. You said it's like when you do it the first time, you're going to have 70, 80% done, and then it just continues to grow, which just then stabilizes the process, is what we've seen even more, because we're so early on in our business, and you helped us in our actual small business, not even the real estate business, just the Finance Cowboy business. And it's crazy just in the short amount of time that we've been building out since working with you, the stuff that we're continually adding, like, oh, we thought we had everything, but you forget something. And then it just gets better and better and better for the team. And the team loves it. As your team grows, geez, my team wanted to knock me out, you know, because we just had nothing in place. And it's hard to, and I'm kind of being funny, but it's like, for real, eventually they'll get tired of it. Like, it's going to get old. And so you'll lose people. And so if you plan on scaling and managing other people, then you better have some good processes in place, because you can't operate on chaos. It's just not going to happen.
Yep. I found that the more that we built out these systems to our contractors, and this applies, like, if you don't flip houses, and but you have a team, all of this applies, right? My contractors were essentially on my team, even though they were external people. They appreciated our system so much that they didn't want to work with any residential clients. They didn't want to work with anyone else or other investors because those other investors were super disorganized. Yeah. And they wouldn't get them that information, or they wouldn't communicate with them quickly, or they didn't know or something, right? And so the fact that we had these systems in place, this information that go, hey, here's our plan, here's our scope of work, here's our finish packet, it's not going to change, and here's our floor plans, everything, man, that just empowered them to be able to go. And then they could manage their guys. They didn't have to constantly wait on me for answers. They weren't bothering me, which was great. And then we just had our quality control then system. And of course, things come up all the time, one up, and you have to adjust and be resilient. But because they knew essentially like the vision of what we were trying to do, like in entirety, then they could also look out for us too and go, hey, like, did you think about this? Like, you don't have this in here. And they started realizing that there'd be things that I missed even originally. And so they felt empowered then to bring it up to me instead of just me directing them. And they go, okay, we're going to do A, B, D, and E. And then C was forgotten. And then I go, oh my God, like, you know, end of the project. Oh God, we're like, what are we going to do? And then, you know, time, money, that all. That all happens. So just as a team, it's like, you know, Jared and I, you and I worked a lot on, let's create that vision for that team, and not just high level, but also like, what is each department, and working with them to complete this is like, what does each department need to do, and how that relates to the bigger picture. And so that way they were able to like fully digest it, like, you know, see it, breathe it, and understand it. So then they can feel empowered themselves to start making decisions themselves, or going out and be proactive about certain things, or building certain things. And you just see that momentum start picking up.
Picture this. You're ready to put an offer on the perfect investment property, but then you hit a wall. Financing. Dealing with hard money lenders is the biggest headache us real estate investors have, and I thought that's just how hard money had to be until I met Backflip. Backflip is totally different. They're changing hard money by making loans actually stress-free, and I know this firsthand because I personally use them for my own deals. It's the perfect combo of tech and real people. Their free app makes everything more efficient, and every loan is personalized to what matters to you, be it low interest, high leverage, or zero payments until you sell or refi. And while other lenders just write a check and forget about you, Backflip has been a true partner for my business. Call them anytime with any question. Even if you don't borrow for them, you can use their app to pull comps and estimate profits. Discover the Backflip difference at backflip.mobi/financecowboypod. It's fun. Yeah, Serena had a word cut out for her with us. I mean, we were ground floor, just basic, nothing in place. I think one of the hardest things for people, this sounds insane, but when they start getting systems in place, like, you know, somebody who's been really involved with their business, but then all of a sudden like stuff starts to decentralize a little bit because there's centralized information and you have good people in place and they know the vision, they start understanding their role, is like you as the visionary aren't having to put out fires all the time. And so you go from like living this life full of, I don't know, call it cortisol or stress, and you're getting that ping nonstop. I need this, I need that, I need that. To like, if you do it right, I don't think you should have that all the time. You should have some time to think and be a visionary. Then you start like, you have to like work through that. You're like, what am I doing here? You know, like, what is the best use of my time now? Don't go stir stuff up in the business. Away, but it's like you have a little more time and it's like, okay, this is great, which then you can use to do things you've always wanted to do, or maybe you got other projects, or you read, or you're creating vision, more vision. But it is interesting. You know, we're not there yet on ours, but I can see it down the pipeline where we're headed that way, to where it's like, I'm not going to be needed for every little decision, which means I'm gonna have a little more free time than I've had for the first 2 years of this business. And so right. Being able to steward that well is key too.
It's really interesting, like, for all the visionaries listening out there too, is I feel like I kind of had an epiphany there as realizing like the visionary wants to start something and then he ends up getting a team together. And then there's a bunch of people working under him or her, like typically they're sitting then in that visionary and then integrator role and everyone else is underneath them. And eventually they'll identify someone that is capable enough to move into that integrator role that they trust and understands their vision enough. But there is that time where all of a sudden things start functioning without you. And then you're like, oh, I want to go stir trouble. Or like, what's going on? Like, how can I be more useful? And it's like, you set up all the systems in place and that integrator to take you out of the day-to-day and into your like higher and best use. But then you still feel detached from it. And so I think the reason why that could happen is because you also need some sort of structure for your vision to be able to know what you should be doing and with your time and highest and best use to then expand on it. You know, instead of like, here you are, right? Instead of going back down into the business, it's like, okay, how do you expand up here in more of the vision, more of the long-term strategic thinking? And with that, then you need some sort of structure of going, okay, am I looking towards my midterm vision now or my long-term vision now? Or is there some workshop I could go to then expand that and brainstorm with people or whatever. And so being really self-aware when you come to that point where you feel like you want to dive back in and change things up, it's like, do I really want to do that? Or am I just don't know how to apply my creative self right now above that line?
And I think that's key because I've watched guys destroy great businesses that they've built because that happened to them and they couldn't stay out of it. And so there was a time where they had to be in it. There's a time where you all have to be in your business, unless you're just multi-millionaire. You can hire a ton of people from the get-go and you've already got all this figured out. But for the normal average Joe, like you're going to have to spend time in it. But once you graduate from that, you're right. You got to be very, very careful because I think it could be detrimental like to future growth, but you also could be so detrimental that you actually destroy what you've created. Because you can't get out of your way. So
giving that control up is really hard. And, you know, I'm a recovering control freak, 100%. My name's Serena, recovering control freak. And Tarl would call me out on it a lot. Cause in the first several years that we were starting to work together, I mean, this didn't come around until probably like 3-4 years ago. And so, I used to think, you know, like I can do it better. Right. I don't want to give this up to someone because I know that the quality is only going to be 80-90% of the job that I could do. Cause I'm more detail oriented and whatever like self justification, you know, I had, but I will say, I don't know, like a lot of stuff, personal growth and all that kind of stuff changed. But what gave me the confidence to hand over a lot of my position and then just managing someone so that way I can focus on the bigger picture systemization, more of the operations and spread myself between different departments like acquisitions and start building more tools and making sure that I was managing effectively. I had to piece away a lot of my role of like coordination and communication with contractors and actually like executing a lot of the scope of work and getting the property from A to Z. And that's giving up a lot of control, right?
Yes.
And a lot of decision making. But what helped me do that, what gave me confidence and able to do that was building these systems, building these checklists, building these templates, building this framework for my teammates to work within. And then also letting them know that the parameters, right? The boundaries, like if you come to a point where this is over this budget, or if the answer isn't in our centralized information, then call me, but this is where you look. And it gave me confidence that it could be executed effectively and just accepting that mistakes are going to happen. And those are learning opportunities. They're not the end of the world.
That's
you just adjust.
Cause you're like, bro, I could have kept that from happening, but you have to let it happen. But Jesus, hard. It's so hard.
No, and really good. With it, even though it's painful for them, you know, I was like, man, that really sucks. But like falling on the sword, like the extreme ownership, that accountability, everything was my fault. If my assistant or my coordinator, she was kind of both, if she messed up, it's my fault, right? Like I could have communicated that better. I could have trained her better. I could have had better information for her. And so there are times where like, you know what, let's just get back up in the saddle and do it better next time. And she just loved that, right? She loved that leadership and going, it's okay to make a mistake, but like she felt more empowered and more confident than ever, even though something bad happened. Right.
You learn so much from failure. There's a story, and they say it's true. I don't know if it's true or not. My dad says it's true, and he's a pastor, so I'm going to believe. But there's like a story of this guy who worked for a company and lost a deal or made some mistake that cost them millions of dollars. So he's packing up his office. He feels terrible. Boss calls him in. He walks in, hanging his head. He's like, I know. I'm out. I've already started packing up. He's like, what? He's like, you're not out. He's like, you just caused the most expensive mistake of all time. And I imagine you probably learned your lesson, didn't you? He said, oh, yeah. He's like, all right, well, don't go do it again. You know? And it's like, bro, you learn so much from those failures. And that's the only way your business is going to grow, because your people, like you said, they feel empowered because it's like, okay, they're down in the dumps, feel bad, but that's where the leaders come in. It's like, no, pick your head up. Now, you know, don't do that again. Let's do this instead. And then that's where growth happens, which is very hard. It's at least from, you know, if you're used to being in control, or, you know, you're the visionary and the integrator kind of at the same time, it's hard, but it's so worth it. So worth it.
Yeah. And if anything, those little mistakes, well, that's like millions of dollars. Yeah. I was probably thousands of dollars, but, or hundreds, hopefully, or just time lost. But, that was almost like insurance then, that things were just going to get better, because if that same person stays within the organization, they're more likely not going to keep making those mistakes, especially if they're rock stars. If they keep making the mistakes, that's a different story. Right. But then I go, okay, she's learning. Great. We're over that milestone. Already come with the expectation that your team are going to make mistakes. They're going to have little failures. They're going to have learning opportunities. And what I would do on top of that is go, hey, obviously the system failed somewhere because we didn't have fail safe, or a safety net. How would you change either the information or the system or the process in order so that didn't happen again? And I'd give her the ability to contribute or like, and have some sort of contribution to that. And so then she felt more empowered, like it was part of hers, like ownership of it. And how she could better work within there too. And then it just from there grew both of us confidence in moving forward.
That is really, really cool. So I'm going to switch gears really quickly. And so we don't have to get super in the weeds here, cause you could probably talk for days on this, but I do want to get like a little bit granular of talking specifically to real estate investors. So like, okay, Serena's crushing it. She's got systems for managing projects. Give me some tips for that. So if you're talking to these investors out here, like, okay, how do I go about these systems and managing, you know, however far or early on in the transaction you want to start at, Serena, whether it's like acquisition or if you just want to talk through project management and deposition, whatever, but what are some key things that people need to implement to make sure that their business is running smooth on the real estate side?
Yeah, I'd say start documenting, right? So from, you know, if you haven't bought a property yet and you're still in that acquisitions phase, then you are analyzing deals, right? And so as you're analyzing the deals, think about that process, what you're collecting. Are you collecting the property details, you know, the public records? Are you collecting like a title report? Are you collecting photos? Are you collecting whatever? You are already creating a system, right? Mm-hmm. From day one. Wow. And so from then just be like, okay, now you bought your first property. Okay, what were all of the things that I needed to do to get to where I am now, and start documenting? And so not only are you like, what information do you need to collect to the property in order to make a decision, but also what was the process of actually closing, right? Depositing their earnest money, da, da, da. As you're learning, document, because then that creates either the checklist for someone else to come in and be your acquisitions person long term, or your checklist for you, but then also can start seeing how to organize that information better to make a decision better. Filing system, whatever. So I would say from day one, you're already on this process, and that we cannot get better unless we analyze, right? And so even after your first project, going back and analyzing, okay, where in that process was just like an absolute, sorry, like shit show, right? Like what was an absolute shit show? Okay, let's think about that for a second. Like maybe how could I have done it better? I would say one of the biggest mistakes we made is in the beginning of us as a team is once we were done with a project, we like never wanted to talk about it or think about it again. It became like Voldemort, right? But what, yeah, like, no, like never, like, yes, we never get to go back. Like it was like the best day ever. And, we don't want to talk about it. We have now 20 other projects to focus on. Why would we even talk about that? It's taking up space. But what we realized was that some of the mistakes we just kept making over and over again.
Mm. And so go watch the game film after the game. How do you get that?
Exactly. Yeah. And so what we started doing was having like analysis meetings afterwards and going, okay, let's analyze, hey, getting the team together and collaborating, like, what point of your process was difficult? Can I help you in a different way, get more information to you so that way it's easier? Like, and so then we started then refining our processes. So even if you are like beginning investor, you just had your first project, you're done with that. Instead of going, you know, on to the next, that was a shit show, and just like writing it off as that was my first one, whatever. There is so much to learn from that project. And so start documenting your processes. And then also I'd break it down into different stages. So we had the acquisition stage, then we had the planning process stage, then we had like our actual rehab stage, which I even broke down more to like, you know, initial services and trash out and demo, and then to rough in, and then like post drywall and finishing out, and then to listing too, right? So like there's these different stages of the project from pre-acquisition all the way to disposition and post-disposition. If you break those up into separate categories, then you're categorizing them, right? And then what did I say before? It's easier then to organize them. It's easier to then analyze them, break them down. And so when we started analyzing our projects at the end, what we realized is that because our acquisition and the handoff from acquisition to remodeling was so far in the past, probably 5-6 months at that point, because we used to do like full gut down the stud remodels. Those systems and those processes got looked at, analyzed the least. And so we got really good at like the finishes, getting it listed, everything that was fresh in the mind, but we started not, you know, we still, the handoff, we kept dropping the baton, you know, little things, but like, you know, they still take time. They still, right. You know, might cost some money here and there. And so what we did is we started breaking the rehabs down into different, the whole acquisition disposition or pre-acquisition to post-disposition in different chunks, and then analyzing them as we went instead. And so, like I said, even if you're a newer investor, just start today with that framework. And even if it's your first or second, those properties will teach you so much. Everyone likes to manage things differently. That's also like when I work with clients that are flippers and they want to systemize their construction management, and they're like, just give me your templates and give me your checklist and give me all of the things. I'm like, hold on, I can give you a bit, but everyone manages the projects differently. Right. And so how you're going to manage it might be different from someone else. And so there's no like right or wrong way to do a lot of that management too. And systemizing, again, it's like what's going to work for you and your team, because the system's no use unless it's used.
Yeah. It's like, what are you doing? What works? Write it down and mm-hmm. keep adding to it.
You just like simplify everything I have to say. Like I just talk in circles.
No. No, you're doing great. You're doing fantastic. I love this. I'm over here. I'm literally writing notes for myself. I'm getting a free session out of you right here is what I'm doing. This was my game plan. No, this is fantastic. No, a lot of people struggle with this. I mean, most people are not good at it. It's very, 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 very hard. And so there's a ton of things everybody's going to take away. And one of the big things for me that's so hard is actually writing the stuff down. I don't know. That just drains me. It's such a like elementary, childish thing to say. It's like, get over it. And I have to get over it. Oh my God, I sit down and write the stuff out. I'm like, who wants to do that?
Oh gosh. Honestly, like, okay, I will put here that I'm a very like action oriented. I want to go out and do things. I want to go, go, go. I do not want to look behind. Right. Like I'm very like innovative and creative. I'm actually like more visionary, I feel like, than integrator. I don't know, this integrator piece too, but I created a lot of this because I was sitting in pain. Like with it, right? And I'm like, and it was just, I was working 6.5 days a week, like 14-hour days. And I'm like, there has to be a better way to do this. Like, I want my freedom back. Like, and so, you know, I want to go actually do something with my life with this. Like, real estate as a vehicle, right? As a tool. Like, no, it's freaking working. You know, I'm a slave to it. And in combination of just seeing how it could be more efficient. And so I really created that. I joke sometimes, like I created that for survival because I would have quit, you know, like,
Well, they say, I truly believe people don't fail. They quit. And I think you know, that's like a big buzzword. It gets likes on and engagement on social media. But if you like really think of it, it's like, why are they quitting? I think they quit. Well, no, they may just have a terrible business idea. Okay, that could be number one. But number two, I think more people quit is because they get overwhelmed because they never do exactly what you teach. Right. And they can't handle it anymore. And they buckle, crumble.
Yeah. Like trying to figure out how to like word this in my mind because I'm not a lazy person. Like I definitely like love to grind. You know, I'm ambitious and I love that momentum and traction. But when it comes to like routines, doing something over and over and over again, the same, when it comes to just disorganization or whatever, like I am lazy. Like I am super lazy. Like I will figure out how to get to A and B, like the most efficient way possible. But there, when you are working in real estate, there's like a lot of details. You can't just like go like flying by the seat of your pants, right? You still need to be conscious of all of those things. And so I just chose, okay, what systems can I create so I can actually grind in the areas that is going to give me like the most momentum and traction, right? And so I'm very picky about what I want to grind on. Yeah. And so, but being lazy and not wanting to like do something over and over again, like actually made me better at systems. So if you find yourself like just working to work, okay, but you know, you have probably friends and family and other aspirations that you are ignoring. Like, you know, maybe figure out why you just want to work, right? Like, what are you running away from? And so, because you're not creating space for yourself to grow or actually, you know, contribute to other important places in your life. And so, I just stopped wanting to work, right? So I just became, you know, I think being intrinsically lazy in this business actually makes you more in the long run. Like I've known some of the, like the laziest people be like the most successful.
Crush it. And don't let her fool y'all. She's accomplished most than anybody listening to this. So, but I get what you're saying. I 100%. We want to get into these things, I think, for freedom and to be able to do what we want. And then we get so bogged down and can never like actually keep having what we want while also experiencing the freedom at the same time. And that comes through exactly what you teach. And it's like, you can either choose to do it or you can choose to live in chaos the rest of your life. So, well, I really appreciate you being on, Serena. You have helped our business so much. She did not ask me for this plug, but I mean, she's absolutely helped us. I've told a ton of people about her. So if anybody's listening to this, you got a small business or your real estate business and you're just, you've heard us talk. So you know what we're talking about. Like you just feel overwhelmed. It's a lot of chaos going on. You don't have those systems in place. And you're like, bro, I need somebody to come in and just organize my life a little bit. Serena's fantastic. So Serena, where can they get a hold of you at? If they just want to like check out your information or if they want to get in contact with you as well.
Yeah, definitely my Instagram. And then from there, you can also book like a 30-minute call with me, see if you know, I can help you in any way. So my Instagram is at serena.claire, serena.claire. And then you can also feel free to send me an email, scalewithserena@gmail.com.
Awesome. And we'll have both of those links in the show notes so you guys can go down and check it out. Serena, thank you so much for being on. Great seeing you again. Thank you for everything you've done for us, and keep up the good work.
Thanks. It's good to see you, Jaren.